Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we're offering 6 conversations from episode 7, where we join 5 leading North American patient advocates to celebrate the approval of Rezdiffra on March 14th, 2024, and to discuss some implications for patients and other stakeholders. This conversation focuses on advocates' reactions throughout the day on March 14th and their thoughts and feelings as they reflected on Rezdiffra's approval in the context of their personal experiences with the disease and their advocacy work. During the day, all the panelists described themselves as having refreshed their screens reflexively throughout the day, waiting for news, and a few described real concern over seeing the announcement that morning from AASLD that Rezdiffra had been approved, only to be withdrawn a little while later. Wayne Eskridge was the first to reflect on his reactions after the approval. He recalled back to his initial diagnosis in 2014 or 2015, as he puts it, a very emotional event in his doctor's office because at that time, the diagnosis sounded to him like a death sentence. Tony Viliotti said the approval did not resonate with his experience, but that he felt a surge of hope for those who might benefit today and in the years ahead. Mike Patel and Jen Jones expressed similar thoughts. In episodes 6 and 7, we have now spoken to 2 of the groups most directly engaged in activities leading to and emanating from the Rezdiffra approval. This group of patient advocates is energized, optimistic, and brimming with new ideas. So just sit back, listen, enjoy, learn, and when you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group. Why don't we go forward, okay? I'm going to start this where I started the Friday session, which means, Jeff, and you don't have to do the whole story in detail. You can do a different one if you want to. But so tell us about your Thursday, right? How was your morning? How did the day go for you? And then what happened after you actually found out that for whatever it was in the afternoon, the drug had been approved? Brave one, go first.
Wayne Eskridge.
My day, you know, we're out here in the West. Our time zone is a couple hours behind you guys. So it was late in the day by the time we actually got the information. Yeah, well, there were a lot of people asking me questions. Have we heard anything yet? So, I mean, it came out pretty much as we thought, but it was still kind of a nervous time. And there was a lot of interest of people just wondering, you know, what was happening. So it was a good day. I really enjoyed it.
Mike Patel.
I will go. I didn't know I had OCD until I kept hitting refresh, refresh, refresh every 5 minutes to try to find out what was happening. So I was on the Madrigal Twitter site, really checking. And then what surprised me was an announcement that said that AASLD had posted this premature announcement and that they pulled it. And of course, the stock went down and it's like, oh no, like what is something going to happen? I go, no, can be confident here, and just kept hitting refresh until the good news was shared. And then I spent the next few hours posting on LinkedIn and Twitter and writing all my physician friends and letting them know on the board and CanAsh we work with. So great, busy, busy day.
So Mike was the person who alerted me to the idea the stock had gone down in the wake of the AASLD announcement. I don't buy individual stocks from drug companies. It's a policy I made when I was doing drug pricing because everything I knew was disclosed and I've just never gotten out of that habit. But it did go up 22%. In the aftermarket. So if you jumped on it when it was 5% down in the day, you could have sold it the next day and made a killing, virtual killing.
Tony Viliotti.
Yeah. I also spent my entire day sitting in front of my computer. And where I elected to sit was, even though I don't own any Madrigal stock, I was on a Yahoo message board for Madrigal stock. So I was following the path of pricing and also a lot of interesting comments from people who do own a stock about what was going on and, you know, why did the stock drop, and, you know, a lot of talk about the AASLD premature announcement. And I was hopeful, but a little apprehensive that it was taking so long, because in the back of my mind, I still wasn't convinced the FDA was going to do the right thing. So until that time came when it became official, it was a tense day for me.
Wayne or Jen, either one.
Jen Jones.
So I was very similar. It was the day of the storm. So first of all, I was already hunkered in. So it was like a perfect day for me to just press, you know, refresh, refresh, refresh. I was really looking for Henry, who is our executive director of the Fatty Liver Foundation, to send out the notice. And we got it. And then I was like, because I knew I was tasked to then get on social media and start sharing social media about this wonderful announcement, to which I did it as soon as possible. But it was really a magical event because we got to see a lot of Wayne and a lot of his quotes and those types of things. So I was very honored to be a part of Fatty Liver Foundation as sober livers in that day.
Yeah, Wayne, you were kind of the poster boy for the announcement, right?
Wayne Eskridge.
Yeah, I was in the press release and it seemed like...
Now, you didn't get a slide like Terry Milton did, but you were in the press release.
Yeah. I got a surprising number of pickups around through the various press. So that was fun. I had a few interviews, which was cool.
I will say this about my experience. I didn't say this on Friday. That first of all, I spent the day on sitting on FDA.gov because they were going to put it out first and they were going to put out the label with it. And that was what I wanted to see. But the more I read the label, the bigger my smile got because I really liked the label. And we talked about that a little bit on Friday. We'll talk about it a bunch today. In fact, as I was hitting refresh on FDA.gov, that wasn't the first place I found out about it. Before my computer could refresh fast enough, Mike Patel sent me a note saying they announced. So he was right in that like 30-second window. For those who think that Mike is not always everywhere and at the right time, this is really impressive. Really impressive. Okay, Jeff Louise, you went through this on Friday. But you got anything you want to add for people who might not be listening on Friday or added details?
Louise Campbell.
For me, it was about the realization that this wasn't only a good day for patients with currently who have metabolic steatotic liver disease, MASH, F2, F3, but for the community yet to be diagnosed and to be located, but also what it does for the profile of poor liver health within other disease spaces, endocrinology, cardiology, and what it could mean for the location of other liver problems, rare diseases, things like that, where we start looking and we find an issue, we then investigate the issue. So drilling down. So it wasn't just how much this will change the world that we live in with MASH and MASLD, but how it will influence future liver disease care location because of its non-invasive aspect in the label.
Jeff McIntyre.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that, Roger, is that we were more than cautiously optimistic about this. You know, I think refresh is the word of the day when it comes to talking about the experience there. We were doing the same thing, and it's certainly not our first experience with a regulatory agency waiting until late in the day to announce something. And so we felt kind of, we weren't sweating it that much for that reason. The number of times that I've experienced a release or a rulemaking or something from a federal agency at 4:55 p.m. on a Friday afternoon, I'd be a rich man if I had a nickel for every time. And so we were still feeling pretty confident around that. But as the 4 o'clock hour rolled around, we got our team together on a Zoom meeting and had the GLI group there all kind of tracking different social media and the websites that were appropriate. And we actually saw the labeling before we saw the announcement that came forward. The PDF got posted. And so that gave us some thought. After the ASLD shenanigans earlier in the day, it made us worry a little bit that there was something misdirected going on. But we knew once we saw that label that things were headed in the correct direction.
You know, it's funny. I wasn't concerned about what happened with ASLD because, as Jeff knows, Louise does also, we scheduled an episode for 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon because we had one or two KOLs that could join us on Thursday, but not Friday. And when I talked to Jeff about that, he started laughing at me, as he's doing now, again, saying, you think this is going to happen early enough in the day to do a 2 o'clock episode? I said, well, you know, if I can't, we'll get rid of it and you and someone else will push back to Friday and everyone else we just can't get. But Jeff had it right. I decided that 4:15 was about the time I'd start worrying. Yes, I was hitting a refresh all day, but not with concern, just kind of brilliant interest. So I'm struck by the idea that right now, of the 7 people here, we have 3 MASH patients, 1 other liver patient, and 3 non-patients. So I want to ask the patients first to talk personally. As a patient, what did it mean to you to see this thing finally cross the finish line? I'll get back to as an advocate in a minute, but just in terms of personal experiences, what did it feel like? What did it say to you?
Well, it brought back a lot of memories. You know, I go back in my course to 2014, 15, and one of the defining moments of my life really has been when the doctor said, you have NASH and I'm sorry, we have no treatments. So it brought those feelings back. That was a very emotional event in his office that day because I had just enough information to say, well, that's a terminal illness problem, but having a therapy that, you know, even if I can't get it, of course, you know, so I'm an F4. I wouldn't qualify for the drug, but I can really appreciate the value that we'll have to the future patient pool. You know, it's a different atmosphere when you at least have some options to think about.
In my situation, as my disease progressed, I was never aware that I had F1, F2, or F3. I jumped right from fatty liver disease to F4, as far as I was aware. So it didn't have any really direct relevance to my particular situation. But just the hope that this drug brings is what really struck me, even though, you know, the drug as it sits will only affect about 300,000 or so people. I think it just improves the mindset of everyone that's battling disease and introduces a sense of optimism that even if this particular drug does not help you, you know, this approval kind of shows the way to what can happen in the future. So I felt kind of exhilarated, you know, relieved that it was after so many years of following this stuff, you know, that it finally happened. In a sense, it was like, you know, sometimes you get the feeling that it's never going to happen. So once it actually did happen, even though it was high level of optimism, it was, it did bring a sense of exhilaration to me.
Well, I am not and have not been a NASH patient. I had a steatotic score that was like S3. So I was a fatty liver patient and was able to clear that. But as we all know, it can come back at any time if you don't do some of the right things. But I agree with what Tony said, especially the comment about hope, that for patients that do progress, especially quickly, which can happen at the later stages, that there is something that they can now take and without a biopsy on top of that. So it's, you know, less invasive and much easier for them to have access to than in the past. So it's great news.
Okay. And Jen, I know you're not a steatotic liver disease patient, but you're a liver disease patient. I was wondering how it struck you.
It all starts with steatotic liver disease.
Yeah, it's true. It's just comes from different forms.
I was diagnosed with fatty liver in 2013, but at the time they said, oh, you know, just drink less. And that's the normal spiel that they give, drink less, lose weight, whatever it may be. And in 2018 is when I was diagnosed with alcohol-associated cirrhosis, which was decompensated and alcohol-induced hepatitis. And so at the time, you know, all they could tell me to do was to stop drinking. And they gave me a handful of diuretics to take and, you know, other types of supplements. But that's all that they could do for me. And I know for people that were in the situation of mass MASH, that they're facing the same thing. It was lifestyle changes and, oh, you just have to go change your diet, and you weren't given any really good help. I think this treatment opens the doors a couple of reasons. I really like how on the label it says that it should be used in conjunction with diet and lifestyle change. I really do like that. I love the fact that it's non-invasive. And I also love the fact that this opens the doors. Think about like diabetes too. And think about the number of drugs from 1982 when insulin came on board. I just took a look. And there's 59 drugs now on the market since 1982 for diabetes too. Well, I could foresee the same thing happening with steatotic liver disease across the spectrum. And this is just one door opening. It's going to help a lot of patients. But as the usage increases and we see how it works in other patients, I believe that this is the start of a new day. It's a new era for us. So I'm super excited for everyone.
That's great. Couldn't agree more. I had an experience on Sunday that put all this in kind of a different context for me, which is I have a good friend who's gravely ill with pulmonary fibrosis, for which there is no cure. And Wayne, hearkening back to your initial comment, fibrosis is tough. Fibrosis is really tough. And I was talking to his partner on Sunday, and, you know, the hopelessness is really devastating. You know, and you can be brave and you can have good days, but you have bad days. And this friend is significantly down the path. And realizing that for so many years, right, that was all that liver patients had to look forward to, and that this might be different now. I couldn't help but connect the two in my mind and wonder.
And now back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. We're still working on next week's topic, but it will be a good one. All the options are great. Until then, stay safe, surf on, see you on the podcast. Bye-bye now.